From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Happy Saturday. It is a beautiful July 25th. Well, as farmers navigate federal tariff impacts and rising costs, New York has launched a new funding program to help. We chat with the state's Agriculture Department Commissioner, Richard Ball, about how to apply. Then we head to Delaware County for the 96th annual farm tour, from a beef cattle farm in Walton to a rainbow trout production farm in Sydney Center, New York. Rosie Starr takes us to a cornhole tournament in Damascus, Pennsylvania for a day of family fun and an audio postcard from Stewart Mountain in the Adirondacks. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report, but first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Linda Kenyon. The war continues between the U.S. and Iran as tensions remain high over the Strait of Hormuz. Speaking at the White House Friday, President Trump said he believes a deal could be forthcoming.
They want to make a deal. I just don't think they're ready yet, but they do want to make a deal. Sometimes they don't want to say they want to make a deal. They want to be the tough guys.
Amid the U.S.-led war against Iran, a dormant decade-long conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran-backed militants in Yemen has erupted yet again. NPR's Emily Fang explains.
Saudi Arabia has been trading fire with the Iran-backed Houthis in Yemen starting 2 weeks ago. This week, the Houthis announced a blockade of the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, which connects the Red Sea to the Suez Canal and which Saudi Arabia is increasingly using to export its oil internationally. Because another waterway, the Strait of Hormuz, is effectively cut off by Iran. All this will further disrupt maritime traffic and global trade. The Houthis fired at two Saudi ships in the Red Sea this week, so Saudi Arabia then struck a port in Yemen and a Yemeni island on Friday. And in further retaliation, the Houthis say they've now aimed strikes at a city in Saudi Arabia this weekend. Emily Fang, NPR News.
A Louisiana Democrat who's losing his House seat to redistricting says he'll run for his former state Senate seat instead of seeking re-election to Congress. His district was redrawn to favor a Republican. Brooke Thorington from member station WRKF in Baton Rouge has more.
For Congressman Cleo Fields, this is all too familiar. He represented the majority black 4th district in the 90s until the Supreme Court ruled it an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. In 2025, he returned to Congress in the newly drawn 6th district seat. But this year, Louisiana redrew the map again. Now Fields says he's hoping to return to the state Senate where he represented Baton Rouge. The Democrat says he isn't viewing this as a step down.
I come back to the state because this is where I feel like I've been most effective. It's hard to get things done in Washington, and particularly when you're not in a majority.
He will finish his congressional term January 3rd. For NPR News, I'm Brooke Thorington in Baton Rouge.
Democrats in Maine are meeting to pick a candidate to face longtime Republican Senator Susan Collins after Graham Platner dropped out of the race. Democrats have coalesced around former Senate President and former logger Troy Jackson from rural northern Maine. The new nominee will be selected at a state party convention in Bangor today. He will have less than 4 months to campaign. Before Platner dropped out of the race, Jackson campaigned alongside him during a failed bid for governor. He was also the progressives' favorite to replace Platner on the ballot. Democrats need a Maine Senate win to take control of the Senate. You're listening to NPR.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. After decades of advocacy and debate, Sullivan County may soon be getting its first homeless shelter. The Sullivan County Legislature authorized a letter of intent on Tuesday with St. Peter's Roman Catholic Church in Monticello to potentially purchase its old school building at an appraised value of $85,000. Dan Hoos, Sullivan County's communications director, said that the letter of intent is not legally binding.
It's just a letter of intent. It actually is not a binding sale or anything, but to create a transitionary facility, a homeless facility, could accommodate, I think I heard up to, of course, this is still in the design phase, but I'd heard that it could be as many as 20 families or as many as 40 singles.
Honor, the housing nonprofit who operates the shelter in Orange County, would run the facility. Sullivan County is the only county in the Catskills and Mid-Hudson Valley without a homeless shelter. Neighboring Delaware, Orange, and Ulster counties all have an emergency housing shelter. Sullivan County planned to apply for state funding in 2025 for the project, but the housing program closed due to exhausted funds. Once the letter of intent is signed, Hoos says it allows for a due diligence period.
Now we have to really assess the building, figure out a design, and make sure that all our I's are dotted and our T's crossed before we actually go ahead with the purchase.
This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, working to maximize the impact of charitable giving and to create customized philanthropic solutions. Learn more at fjc.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, farmers have had an especially tough year. We've been reporting here on Radio Catskill how new federal tariffs, rising costs, extreme weather conditions, along with climate change, all on top of the everyday stressors of running a farm, are being felt from farmers across New York and Pennsylvania. In response, New York has opened the Agricultural Resiliency Against Tariffs program. It opened up on June 29th and applications close on August 11th. It's a $30 million state program to help combat rising costs and the impact of tariffs on farms. Joining me now is New York's Department of Agriculture and Markets, Commissioner Richard Ball. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's great to be with you, Kimberly. Thanks.
So let's talk a little bit about the Agricultural Resiliency Against Tariffs program, which was announced earlier this year. It was created in response to the rising costs that many farmers are seeing due to federal tariffs. I'm curious if you could tell me a little bit more about what you're hearing from farmers about why support is needed, especially right now.
Tremendous response from farmers because this is hitting farmers coming and going. The impact on farms is kind of obvious, and it started back in 2025, of course, when it was first rolled out. But it's affecting grain and feed and building materials, machinery, equipment, parts, et cetera, inputs that farmers are using on their farms every day, particularly in the springtime as they ramp up to get ready for production. So for farmers, tariffs kind of hit them coming and going. On the coming part, things that I just mentioned, inputs that they will buy to get ready to, you know, farm that season and throughout the year, building materials, et cetera. And then with the retaliation that comes with the tariffs, that can affect the commodity prices that they would sell their crop for. So it raises their input costs and it may compromise the value of their finished crop when they get at the end of the season. So for farmers, the impact was immediate and pretty well felt across the commodities. The governor talked to me about it at the beginning of the year and back in 2025 and actually asked us to pull together a roundtable of farmers covering the different commodities and different crops, dairy, vegetable, fruit, et cetera, that we raise here. Our bankers and Cornell, et cetera. And she listened to what farmers had to say. And I think based on that, she proposed this direct payment to farmers for relief of tariffs. And the legislature completely agreed, flew through the budget process, really. And now we're in the process of getting that out to the farmers and getting that program going. And the response that we've had so far from the farm community has been very strong, very positive.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about how we first heard about these federal tariffs in early 2025, and now we're in the growing season, summer 2026, a year and a half later. In terms of how much farms are eligible to receive through this program, can you tell me a little bit about how much farms can receive?
It will depend on the size of the farm, clearly. First of all, it has to be a farm that meets the USDA and New York State qualifications for being a farm. Two-thirds of their income needs to come from farming, for example. We're following that national criteria and the New York State criteria. So they have to be a farm, a legitimate farm. And then after that, there's two tracks. And one is exclusively for dairy cattle. And a second one is for basically other livestock products, especially crops, aquaculture as well. And so it will depend, obviously, the more the farm is producing, the bigger the possibilities of them being impacted by tariffs. So farms, depending on their size, will see anywhere from around $1,000 at minimum up to $25,000 at maximum.
And, you know, these farms have to be active farms. Can you talk a little bit about any specific eligibility requirements for farms? Do they have to have, for example, like production or revenue requirements, for instance?
Yeah, and specifically with regards why there's two tracks. One is for dairy, and there we need the cooperative that they sell their milk through to verify their production records, you know, so we know that they actually did produce that milk and that it was, you know, sent through their cooperative. Mm. That's why there's two tracks. Otherwise, they will need a financial advisor, banker, to verify that their numbers are honest and accurate. But basically, if they qualify to meet the definition of a farm and can collaborate that their numbers they're reporting are, in fact, their numbers, then they qualify.
And, you know, we're obviously talking about this tariff relief program and the impact of supply chain disruptions, rising costs, et cetera, and how farmers can build resiliency on that front. But I'm curious what else you're hearing from farmers right now in terms of what kinds of other threats are top of mind for them.
You know, I think about this a lot, and I was with three groups of farmers yesterday. And the biggest thing that I think is in front of mind for them is the uncertainty of all of this. You know, you make your best guess on what you need to have in the ground, what you need to have available for production this year. And so you plan, you know, farmers spend a lot of the winter planning what they're going to do next year based on what kind of year they had last year. And right now, given the uncertainty in trade with, you know, our two biggest customers in the United States and in New York, frankly, are Canada and Mexico. We look at, you know, how much of a crop do I need to plant this year? How much confidence do I have in the markets? Because no farmer likes risk. They're risk averse. So they always look at ways to mitigate risk. And right now, the uncertainty in the day-to-day news cycle is very difficult. You know, the complications from what's going on with Iran, shipping, price of fertilizer, price of fuel. You know, this spring, fertilizer and fuel prices hit us as an agricultural industry at a really tough time. Farmers are getting diesel fuel in their tractors. They're working up their land. They're fertilizing their crops. And both those prices went substantially very high. Fertilizer just about more than doubled in price, and diesel fuel went up a lot. So transporting their vehicles and their equipment, moving their tractors on the farm, then the uncertainty of what it's going to cost them to do that when, in so many cases, what they're going to sell their crop for does not fluctuate. Agriculturalists are generally known as price takers, not price makers. So the price of milk is determined by the federal marketing orders. And, you know, when their costs go up to produce that milk, they don't get to charge more for that milk. They just have to take that. So I think the uncertainty about where we're going with the USMCA trade agreement, what's going to be in the news tomorrow morning, what's the price of fuel going to be next week, I think I would say the biggest threat the average farmer feels is the uncertainty of what's coming.
Yeah, definitely well said. And I think really echoes what we're hearing in the Catskills from farmers. I was visiting some apple farmers earlier this year, and they were saying, and this was right after the overnight frost, I think in April. And yes, something that farmers across the board have told me that is agriculture is increasingly feeling like a growing gamble because of just growing uncertainty. So I definitely hear you there. You know, I'm thinking about even just this past week, we saw several tornado watches in this area, as well as other extreme weather conditions throughout this summer. We just talked a little bit about the overnight frost that we had earlier this spring. What are you hearing from farmers about, you know, navigating extreme weather conditions on top of these economic factors?
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, farmers are seeing more extremes in weather. And I personally, on my own farm, I've been farming for a long time. But in the last 20 or 30 years, I think I've seen 500-year events and one 500-year event in terms of flooding.
Wow.
I know a couple of years ago, I was crossing New York State talking to farmers about extreme wet weather and flooding and managing the excessive rainfall. It's not that it's raining more often, but when it does rain, sometimes it can be more impactful than, you know, than it had been in the past. And the next year I was out visiting farms across the state, looking at drought damage to potatoes and corn and various crops that didn't have access to irrigation. So I think we're seeing more extreme events, more extreme weather kind of things going on. And that's a concern. And that's obviously something's different in the environment. We've seen extreme weather in the past, but those events just seem to be more common. And the summers seem to be a little hotter. And so that's a concern to farmers. And that's not anything we can do differently other than here at the department, you know, we did secure some funding a few years back for a pot of money we call climate resilient farming. We've grown that pot of money with the support of the governor and the legislature to invest more money in helping farms mitigate the risks of extreme weather. And what I mean by that is, you know, irrigation systems, water retention ponds, runoff capacities, investing in cover crops, doing things a little different on the farm to manage for a wetter than normal year and manage for a drier than normal year. It's been very popular. Farmers have taken full advantage of it, and it's been good to see that.
I want to come back to the Agricultural Resiliency Against Tariffs program. The program opened up on June 29th, and the deadline's coming up on August 11th. Anything you want farmers who are interested in applying to know as they think about applying and then also preparing their application?
Yeah, go to our website, take a look at it. There's information that will help them walk through what they need to do. I know a lot of our cooperatives, our banking system for agriculture with Farm Credit principally and other banks will help farmers with what they need to know and when they need to know it. But it's pretty simple. We've made the process as easy and simple to start. We do need to verify some numbers, not hard at all, but we're over 1,000 applications that have come in already. As you mentioned, the deadline, August 11, and then we hope to get this money out the door in September. But yes, I would encourage people to go online, get the do's and don'ts and the simple instructions on how to get started with it. But I would encourage them to get started with it now. Don't wait until a day before and begin the process, because it will take a little bit of time to verify numbers and things like that. So I would encourage them to get started.
That was New York's Department of Agriculture and Markets Commissioner Richard Ball. Commissioner, thank you again. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, the latest Star Talk.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Bella Freud.
She's a clothing designer and host of Fashion Neurosis, a conversation podcast about the connection between clothes and identity. It's an unconventional setup where Freud's guests lie on a couch. Her great-grandfather was the legendary psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures, here on this public radio station.
Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Donna Fillenberg. This week on Catskill Character, we meet local historian, author, and alumnus of the original Woodstock Music and Arts Fair, Myron Gittell. Myron wrote the definitive account of the medical response at Woodstock, and he's on the hunt for even more historical artifacts. Join us for his story on Catskill Character, 11:30 Saturday morning, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Kimberly Izar. You're listening to Farming Country. Well, you know what time it is. This week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farming Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk.
The long-lasting Delta Aquarian meteor shower will reach its peak this week. This meteor shower lasts for 6 weeks from July 12th to August 23rd each year. Though the shower tends to favor more southerly latitudes than ours, it is not a shower to discount. Given dark skies, you can expect to see about 20 meteors per hour this week. The full moon will be on Wednesday, but the night sky will be moon-free after midnight this week. The Delta Aquarids appear to radiate from a point below the Great Square of Pegasus, which rises in the northeast just before 10 p.m. As is the case with most meteor showers, the best time to go out will be after midnight. By this time, Pegasus will be halfway up in the eastern sky. Pegasus is most easily found by locating the big square that makes the body of the horse. Use the bright star Deneb in the constellation Cygnus as your guide to the square in Pegasus. From Deneb, look straight down towards the eastern horizon and you will find the topmost corner of the square. Follow that line through the bottommost corner and you will find the radiant point for the Delta Aquarid. The parent comet for the Delta Aquarids is not known for certain, but it is suspected that the meteors come from Comet 96P McColtz. A 2017 study found that the debris that causes the meteor shower left the comet 20,000 years ago. Watch for the old dust from this comet to crash into Earth's atmosphere during the early morning hours this week. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
I'm going to have to keep an eye out for those meteor showers. I think that Keith said that the best time to watch is after midnight, so maybe one day this week I'll try and stay up later. Thank you again to Keith for that report. Well, cornhole and family fun, that was the vibe at the Damascus Cornhole Tournament earlier this July. Rosie Starr was at the Damascus Manor Community Center in Wayne County to capture the excitement.
We're standing in a field and there's a lot going on. It's a family fun day. People are jumping up and down and screaming about this event, and there's stuff all over the ground, and there's a gentleman over here with a Damascus and a number 19, beautiful blue shirt on. So he's going to tell us what is he enjoying about this event and what is his role in this crazy game, and please explain
all
to the
right.
audience.
So my name's Dustin Wills, and I live here in Damascus. Been here full-time for about 2.5 years, and I'm on the board of the Damascus Manor Community Center. Last year was our first annual Family Fun Day, and basically it was a monsoon and rained us completely out. It was pretty dreadful, so we were a little bit worried about doing it again this year, but I think everybody's having a great time. So this year we decided to make the feature a cornhole tournament. We couldn't believe how many teams we actually got out here to sign up and play. And we've just been having a blast all day playing cornhole.
Please explain what that means.
Will do. So basically, you put two boards out 27 feet apart, and the boards are angled slightly, about a 30-degree angle to them, and they have a hole cut out in them. And you throw bean bags into the hole or onto the board, and that's how you score. And today we're playing a very easy community day of cornhole, which is first to 21. Don't have to win by two, and you don't have to be exact for you cornhole fans out there.
Okay, could you just clarify, there's beans in the bag and it's called cornhole?
Yes, I think back in the original day with cornhole, there was actually corn kernels in the potato sacks. And that's how it all started. And that's how it got the name cornhole. And if you think about it, cornhole is really a modern day replacement for horseshoes. But it is a little easier to throw a cornhole bag than a horseshoe.
Okay, so I see eight boards, four on each side.
Yep.
How many in each team?
We had 10 teams this year, and each team is two people. So we had 20 people come out and play. And Heidi has a whole bracket system set up online to keep track of everything. This is very professional out here.
And where do you stand in this so far today?
Well, we had our first heartbreaking loss the last game. We came out fast, two wins in a row, but this last game we tripped up a little. But we're still playing. We still have a chance. But no matter what, it's just a fun time. And the really nice thing is that when you play, you have to stand next to whoever you're playing against for a good 15, 20 minutes, and you strike up a conversation and meet someone you never met in your community before. So that part of it, I think, is probably the best part. Got some cool people here today.
Yeah, that means everybody wins.
Everybody wins, yep. And we got some great food over there and a DJ playing music. I mean, what more could you want?
That's right. Thank you for bringing this all to light.
My pleasure. And everybody in the DMCC, especially shout out to Heidi and Tina. They did all the heavy lifting here today, really. And Birdie, they really did all the heavy lifting today, so big thanks to them. Okay. And thanks for you for coming out here and helping us get the word out about the DMCC.
Oh, sure. But really curious about this game.
Okay, we have a big announcement. Here we go. We are down to six teams. Woo! Can we get a round of applause for our team so far? They've been amazing. Okay. Oh.
My name is Heidi Hackamer, and last year they tried to do a family day around a softball tournament, and it got rained out. And so when we were talking about the family day this year, I thought, well, maybe cornhole would be good because it's so accessible and anyone can play cornhole. So we decided to turn it into a cornhole tournament, and here we are.
Okay, so you have a table in front of you. Explain this table.
Okay, so this is our Cornhole Central. That is the official title of the table. On the table, we have our digital bracket system to make sure everything runs smoothly. But the creme de la creme are the two corn crowns that our friend Carol made. They're pretty impressive. They're these crowns that have corn coming off the top of them. And the winning team gets the crown. That's what they get to win if they win today. It's made with a hat band, so it can fit just about anyone. We have these metal corn structures coming up with artificial grasses coming around them, and then it's ringed in almost like these harvest leaves. They are quite amazing. They're about, what, like a foot tall? They are quite a thing.
Let's describe the participants.
Yeah.
It's teams of two, and we have anything from husband and wife teams to father-son teams to, it's a total mix. One of the teams playing right now, Scott and Pele. Pele's visiting this weekend. He's my friend. They didn't know each other before the tournament started, and they both came up and said, we want to play, so we put them together.
And I love it. There's kids running across the lawn. It's very much a family event day.
Yeah, and we have a big crowd underneath the pavilion enjoying the hot dogs and the burgers and just taking it all in. It's a great day.
You used an expression before about...
I was a cornhole virgin before, but not anymore.
Okay, that's Irene Soloway. So you please explain what that means.
Well, it just really means that I've never actually played cornhole before until this cornhole festival, but there's more to come, believe me. Come to the Pepperfest, October 3rd from 12 to 4 at DMCC, 60 Conklin Hill Road.
Hi, Nick. Tell me what your experience is today.
Just been fun so far. It's nice to see everybody here. Good day for it, too. It didn't rain.
Hi, Bob. Tell us what your experience is here today.
Very good.
My name's Andrea. It was a lot of fun. It was my first time I've ever played, so
I got a lot of practicing to do if I ever want to do it again.
What's the hardest part?
Getting it in the hole.
That's it. Ba-da-da-bum.
I mean, what is it like to be participating as a guest?
Oh, I love the amazing sense of community here.
This is Naomi's sister.
I'm here from North Carolina, and it's just such a neat way how everybody gathered for the pancake breakfast and then came here and gathering here and just hanging out, getting to know people. It's really a lovely town.
Do you have anything like this in your hometown?
We live in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is a more of a metro area, so it's really refreshing to be able to come here and do this today.
I love this sign, jump rope making, $10. Can you explain this? Carol? What is this design about jump rope?
Let's make your own jump ropes. So the kids, they wind up, they put the yarn on it. They have to put like 9 full strands of yarn, and then they wind it themselves. And when it's all finished, it's a jump rope. There's a sample right over there. I bought it years ago as a kit, and in order to be able to come to events or family events and be able to do fun things for the kids. The kids pick 3 colors of yarn. All 3 strands get wound up back and forth onto the jump rope maker. The kids then wind it themselves, and as they're winding it, it pulls the tension, and then the 3 strands, so each individual strand is twisting, and then eventually there's enough tension on the 3 strands that the 3 strands start to wind themselves. It's called a traveler. That traveler pulls closer and closer and closer as they get to the, and then whoop, it just, that's just how it works. And then we cut it off and bam, the kids have a jump rope.
Sounds simple and fun.
It really is. It's good.
There's just basic eye hooks, 3 basic eye hooks.
Yep. It's simple. It really is a simple design.
I notice you're at the octopus making table. What are you doing here?
I'm making octopuses for people.
What kind of colors are you using?
2 green ones and 2 blue ones and 2 pink ones.
You gonna hang it someplace?
I'm gonna give it to people.
I like what's on your eye. You have a face painting. Who did that?
Brooke's mom, my friend.
And what is that painted on your eye?
Sunflower.
Okay, we have a new match to announce. The winner of this match goes to the finals, and the 2 teams are the Salad Tossers and the Hole Stuffers. You'll be playing on the WW board in the middle. Let's give these guys a big round of applause. This is to get to the finals.
I've noticed you have a perfect stance in this. Tell me your name and tell us about your experience with this game.
So I'm Zachary Peck, and I've been playing for, about 2 years. And one of the finalists was the one that got me into playing the game. So we used to play at our local fire hall, and one guy that was playing there actually told me, he says, instead of moving your feet every time, stay stationary. Don't move. The only thing that moves should be your arm. And ever since then, I've been throwing pretty good.
And you have a pretty good record. I've been watching you. It's like Michael Jordan getting that in every time.
I try. Yep. It's a lot of fun. We used to play at the fire hall every week, but now we just travel and do tournaments.
And what fire hall are you with? Where are you from around here?
Beach Lake.
Okay. You're one of my neighbors.
Yep. 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 Live right over on Milanville Road, right behind the fire hall. So.
Okay. Thank you. This is quite an experience watching you. Yeah. It's fun.
Yep.
What do you think of today's event?
Beautiful day for it. A lot of fun. Pretty good turnout, and everybody's throwing pretty good.
Not too hot.
Yeah. Not too bad.
So you're so organized with this. You brought along your own little 4-pack. So tell us, do you have a favorite brand of these?
These bags here I actually got off of my buddy over there, the one that got me started in the whole game. These were his, and we kind of did a little trade. He found a set of bags that he really wanted, so I bought the ones that he wanted, and he gave me those.
And what's in these beans?
Yeah, they're like resin beads. They're not corn. They're a resin bead. That way they don't create any powder.
It's in a bag, and what's the bag made out of?
Just any ordinary fabric. There's two sides. There's a slow side and then the fast side.
What does that mean?
So the slow side, obviously, it slows it down a lot quicker, whereas the fast side, it can slide right up the board a lot easier. So if you have a block of bags in front of the hole, you can use the fast side, and it can push all the bags out of the way.
I noticed one of your moves was pushing the bag out of the way, but that bag went into the hole, not the one that you threw. Does it count?
Yes. Yep.
Wow. It's a game of skill.
Oh, yeah. And it could either go in favor of you or the other person.
Luke said, you guys
like it did.
Just like in life. Good luck. Carol, I understand you're responsible for designing the contest crowns.
I am. So we just went to Hobby Lobby and walked around and got some inspiration and made it into a real crown. Like so it's ornamental and it looks like a crown. So that's all. We took metal, actually a yard stake, took it apart, and we took baseball caps and I cut them down and sewed the baseball cap so it would be an adjustable hat for the winners. Because I didn't know if maybe a kid would win or something in case it was like family team. But yeah, it worked out great. They came out absolutely beautiful.
Everyone loves the colors. You did a great job. You're very creative.
I don't think you can go wrong with corn, right? Orange, yellow, and everything's great. It's awesome.
Okay, let's find out what's happening.
All right, everybody. We'd like to announce the first annual 2026 DMCC Cornhole Champions, Team Whatever!
Okay, let's talk about this victory of yours, the both of you. What is your name and what is it like to have this event?
It's a good event, good to help out the community and everything. So, my name's Tom.
So. You from around here?
Yeah.
You did a great job with the competition.
Thank you.
How long have you been playing this game?
For a while now. Yeah.
And how about you? What is your name?
My name's Randy.
Hi, Randy. What is your experience like?
My experience is good. I like playing cornhole. I wish the younger generation gets more involved. But I've been playing for like 8 years. But it's like a good time.
Yeah.
Well, you meet a lot of nice people.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
But it's good.
Congratulations.
Oh. Thank you.
Oh, and what is it that you have here in your hand?
25.
Okay. And a crown.
A little something. Yeah. Entry free.
Oh, here. We're going to donate this back.
No.
For the community.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
We came to do this for fun. So.
You donated your money back into the community.
Back.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's sweet. Well done, guys.
Thank you.
Good shooting, man.
Thank you.
My name is Bernadette Miller, and I'm the treasurer for the DMCC. And I just decided one day that I wanted to give back to my local community, so I found out when a meeting was, and I went to it, and I said I want to be involved.
And we're speaking of the Damascus Manor Community Center, and today's event on July 11th. You were partly organizing this. Tell us about your organization in this.
I worked with a group to put on this family fun day with the cornhole tournament. We really just decided that we want to do something that the community can be involved in. Cornhole happens to be something we know a lot of people around here do just for fun. Some people go to tournaments with, so we thought it would be a great way to bring in people from the community. We all work together, just kind of putting ideas together, things that the community might like, face painting, DJ, some music, offer some food, have the local ambulance corps and fire truck here. We want to give back. We also want to be able to bring in funds for the community center so that we have other ways of giving back as well. So this was one of our ideas for that.
I liked when I walked around, I saw a lot of children's activity. Oh, jump yes. rope making, and there's swings over here. It really is a circle of family activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to have something for the kids to do always. That's always a good thing.
Okay, let's go find out about the raffle.
All right,
let's do that. It looks like you're doing double duty. You were behind the food tent before, and now you're at the raffle table.
I am everywhere to make the day go smooth.
Tell us who you are.
Tina Gear.
What was your role in organizing this?
Just doing the footwork, getting donations from generous businesses. We got basket raffles donated. We had monetary donations, food donations.
And what about this raffle? What is a raffle about?
These are the raffles. I'm sorry.
That all benefits the community center.
$10.
All the funds from that, the 50-50 is we're donating to Equinox Fire Department because they are so generous to come and bring a fire truck for the kids to hang out and see.
All right, here's the draws.
This is the Delaware Valley Farm and Garden $100 gift card.
Wow, $100 gift card.
Let's shake them up, right? Shake them up.
649-716.
That's me.
Oh, yay! Nice! Hey, so that concludes 2026 Family Fun Day. Just want to thank everyone for coming out. Thank you all the hard work in putting this together. The cornhole tournament was absolutely fantastic. Thank you all. Hey, it was a lot of fun. Let's do it again next year. Yeah.
The location for the Damascus County Community Center is 60 Conklin Hill Road in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. The DMCC hosts a variety of events, classes, potlucks, and is the site for the Recycling Center. More information is available on their website, pa-dmcc.org. That's pa-dmcc.org. For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Rosie Starr.
And thanks so much to Rosie for that report. We're going to take a short break, but we hit the trails in the Adirondacks up next.
Connecticut's Democratic Senator Chris Murphy says the current version of capitalism isn't working for Americans.
I'm not a democratic socialist, but I do believe that the Democratic Party has been historically way too timid in taking on corporate power.
But with major party disruption coming from his left, Senator Murphy joins us to talk about how he thinks Democrats can move forward. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, a Democrat and a Republican in Congress on how the immigration crackdown is changing America.
They're going to see vast swaths of our workforce disappear. They're going to see our economy contract.
Mr. President, you got to change the way when it comes to immigration. Otherwise, we're not going to have a Republican Party.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Tom Papa warned everyone that the cyclospora outbreak is not that much fun.
And heads up, this is one explosion you do not look cool walking away from in slow-mo.
And Peter Sagal will join us this week to see what else is bursting out of the week's news and a conversation with the dreamboat of Abbott Elementary, Tyler James Williams. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back. You're listening to Farm and Country here on Radio Catskill. Well, the Adirondacks are known for their high peaks with panoramic views. But in the foothills of the park, a smaller climb can offer a satisfying payoff from the summit. Emily Russell went for a short hike up Stewart Mountain in the southern Adirondacks and produced this audio postcard.
So I'm hiking up Stewart Mountain
which is in the Southern Adirondacks. It's part of the Chester Challenge, and it's a warm summer day. The sun is leaving these little, like, shifting pockets of light along the trail as I go. Starting to climb a bit. I've been out driving around the Southern Adirondacks for work today, and I wanted to stretch my legs at the end of the day, but not do too big of a hike. So I just looked at the map, and I saw this on there, and it seemed short enough. And so here we are. The forest floor is, you know, it's covered in a lot of dried leaves from the fall, but there are sprouts of lime green grass popping up. Each strand is, I don't know, 6 to 8 inches tall. And it's just giving the forest floor a bit of brightness all around me. I grew up not too far from here. And every so often we would, as a kid, go hike a little mountain in Warrensburg or Lake George. And so I have a fondness for these smaller Adirondack foothills, like this one, like Stewart Mountain. I'm getting near the summit now and started to hear this swell of, I don't know if they're grasshoppers or another kind of insect that makes that kind of low humming chorus that you hear throughout the summer. Okay, wow. And here we are. Oh, this is amazing. So I'm walking out on this ledge of rock. Wow, it's warm out here in the sun. I can feel it coming up from the rock. And, oh, the view is just spectacular. I can see what I believe is Loon Lake. And there's someone water skiing behind a boat out there, a couple other boats. And just beautiful. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio, on Stewart Mountain in the Southern Adirondacks.
And thank you so much to Emily from our friends at North Country Public Radio and the New York Public News Network. Now we head to Delaware County for the 96th annual Delaware County Farm Tour. I was up in Walton and then made my way to Sydney Center on July 13th. Visiting farms for this annual event, and oh my goodness, it was actually a very, very hot day, but it was such a fun day to just spend the morning into the afternoon with the farmers, just hearing about all the ways that they're, you know, bringing innovation and, you know, evolving as a farm as needed. So this is a local farm showcase that Delaware County's Cornell Cooperative Extension hosts each year. And here's a glimpse into the full day event. On a Monday morning in early July, several dozen people gather outside Elmside Farm in Walton, New York. It's a beef cattle farm owned and operated by the Reynolds family and one of three farm stops during the 96th annual Delaware County Farm Tour. Megan Potter is the Precision Feed Manager Team Leader at Delaware County's Cornell Cooperative Extension, or CCE, who emceed the tour.
We are hosting the 96th annual Delaware County Farm Tour. That means we've had 95 other ones of these, but we highlight two or three local farms. Today is three different farms throughout the county. We have a beef farm here at Elmside Farm, where beef production and beef genetics and animals are their marketable thing that they sell. And then we'll be going to a fish farm and a dairy farm later today.
And I mean, you said this is the 96th one, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, after doing this for so many years, what makes this year especially special?
I think the diversity that we have in the types of farms that we are highlighting is one of the key parts. The other thing that's really neat about all three of these operations is innovation. They all have focused on some unique and really neat technologies that have really made their farms better.
Awesome. And then if, you know, there's one thing that folks take away from today. I know there's a lot of folks here. What comes to mind for you?
I think in general, if farmers are attending, we hope that they get an idea that they could take home and apply it on their farm. Maybe something that they've been struggling with that, oh, I see this is how they've done it. I think that'll work on my farm. I think that's the hope when we highlight some of these different operations. And I think there's a lot of support staff here as well for folks that work with other farmers, so they can bring those ideas out to the farms that they work with as well.
This year, the tour is focused on innovation on farms, from cattle genetics to farming infrastructure to sustainable trout production practices. Art Reynolds is the owner of Elmside Farm. He operates the farm with his daughter, Darby Hammond, as the herdsperson. They have about 70 cow-calf pairs on about 200 acres of land. And part of Elmside's innovation is how they've designed their facilities to support their farm as they grow and evolve. With the help of a safety fund grant from the John May Farm Safety Fund, Reynolds was able to purchase a chute handling system so he and his team can more safely handle, vaccinate, and care for their cattle.
In this chute here, the sides open up on it. You can open the bottom up so that you can nurse a calf if a cow doesn't want her. Want to let the calf nurse, you can get her locked up, let the calf in there. But the both sides open right up on the chute, so if the cow happens to go down or whatever in there, you can get the cow out.
And this changes in width too, right?
Yep. Yep, that moves in and out. The chute moves in and out.
It really opens up opportunity to do different kinds of easily do vet work and those kind of things with cows that you can't if you can't restrain them.
And the vet likes it when he gets here, you know, instead of having to chase him around. This chute system here was there. I have another section that sets over there, just makes the chute too long, takes up too much barnyard. But the whole chute system was right around 10,000. And that was during COVID. So, I mean, they paid for half of it. I don't know. They're probably, I'm sure they're more now, but they'll still pay for up to 5,000 of it.
Potter with Delaware County's CCE says chute handling systems are often for the benefit of both the animal and the worker.
What's neat about these animal handling systems is, yes, they were designed for the safety of the worker, but they're also designed around the way animals think and move naturally. So they're designed around the fact that they're herd animals that don't like to be cornered in, they like to be close. That's why it's called a squeeze chute, is because they like to feel the pressure of the rest of the herd around them. And that's why that sweep or tub will move in and will keep them close together, so they don't feel scared at all. It just keeps the sides closed. It lets them not see a bunch of things that could scare them. And it's really designed around the way animals think and move.
That's what you meant.
Up next on the farm tour is Sky Top Springs Farm in Sydney Center, New York. It's a trout production farm raising Kamloops rainbow trout. From hatching their fish from eggs to processing the trout and getting them ready all the way for market days. Mike Siletti is the co-owner of Skytop Springs. He says having control over the whole process is critical to the success of managing a sustainable business.
Of course, we recognize that we don't want to have an adverse effect on our environment, so that has been important to us as well. We are finding out a lot more about our seafood supply in this country, and that was sort of the impetus for getting into this business. And offering it as food rather than for stocking. So we are in control of the trout's life cycle from hatching to harvest through processing and packaging and directly to market. So from the time that every fish that comes through our operation hatches to the time that someone purchases it from us at a farmer's market or a restaurant customer, we've been in control of that. And so one aspect of this operation that you're not going to see today is the processing. So up the driveway, you passed it on your way down, you probably didn't even see it, there are two shipping containers. In those shipping containers is a fully built out commercial kitchen and a smokehouse that's regulated by New York State Department of Ag and Markets, USDA, and FDA. So we do all of our processing there, which is truly unique. So we are a producer of rainbow trout, and we are also a processor for seafood, freshwater, but it's still considered seafood. Puts us in a different class. There's a lot of regulation behind the processing of seafood, which does not exist in upstate New York. I know for certain we are one of only three land-based freshwater aquaculture operations in the state that is a producer and a processor. So that is what really makes us unique.
And Farming Country didn't make it to the final stop of the tour, but attendees ended their day at Ritz Farm. It's a dairy production farm in Franklin, New York, and it also served as an ice cream stop. You can find more information on the farms and future agriculture events up in Delaware County at ccedelaware.org. In Walton, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill. Well, this weekend, the forecast is looking absolutely beautiful, so I hope that you have some time to enjoy it. Today's looking sunny with a high near 81 and partly cloudy during the evening. Tomorrow, Sunday, is also looking like sunshine during the day and partly cloudy in the evening. If you've been listening throughout the week, you know that there is so much happening this weekend. Radio Catskill crew is going to be spanned out at several events. We're going to be at the Borscht Belt Fest in Ellenville. That festival has actually already kicked off. There are shows and museum tours today with a free street fair tomorrow. The festival honors the long history of the Catskills Borscht Belt region with live music, kosher cuisine, and family fun all weekend. Also happening this weekend is Riverfest in Narrowsburg. That's happening tomorrow, July 26th. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This is such a fun event. It's a long-standing 36-year tradition celebrating art and music and ecology. If you're going to be there, make sure to keep an eye out for the Radio Catskill table. And our very own Jason Dole, I hear, is going to be emceeing, so definitely keep your ears and eyes open for that. You can find more events and information up on our community calendar at WJFFradio.org. That's all for today's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's CatsCast with Brett Berry. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and PR. I'll catch you next week.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's vacation daydreaming with virtual trips to the sunny, olive oil-drenched Mediterranean, and then up to the beautiful, bright cities of Scandinavia for a great way to smoke salmon in a home kitchen and more. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, the running kind returns to the Catskills with a zero-carbon mountain race at Bel Air, pushing the limits sustainably.
As we get further down the line of dealing with different climate catastrophes and whatnot, it's the little things that matter, and we're using the trails. We should be stewards of the trails.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
A new State Department report blames Cuba for fomenting an anti-American left. Meanwhile, the GOP is pushing the C word hard.
The barbarians are in the gate. Look, 35 years ago, Republicans and Democrats in Congress were fighting communism on a distant shore. Now it's here.
Why communism and why now? On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
this afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.